WDIY presents Lehigh Valley Art Salon, showcasing the arts in every form.
Good evening. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm your host, Sheila White. The pandemic has had quite an impact on the performing arts in our area school districts. But we're going to listen to two gentlemen from different perspectives in our schools about how the children are adjusting. The first, Mr. Mark Stutz, who is the Director of Visual and Performing Arts for the Parkland School District. And also, later in the program, we will hear from Justin Amon, who is the Director of Theater Programs at Freedom High School. Our first guest this evening is Mr. Mark Stutz. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here tonight, and it's a great topic to be discussing.
I'd like to start our conversation tonight telling our listeners a little bit about what typically happens in the Parkland School District without a pandemic with regards to the performing and visual arts.
So that's a great starter because it's a huge undertaking. My position is K through 9, all art, music, theater, dance, anything in the performing arts. And what we've done over the past 20-some-odd years that I've been doing this is looking to build audiences and involvement so that the most students get the most experience and the most public get to see it. Historically, in our elementary schools, it would be mostly based on music concerts, chorus concerts, band, orchestra concerts. In the middle school, besides those concerts, they also, each of our two middle schools does a fall play and a spring musical. And then the high school does, historically, a fall play, a children's show somewhere around November, middle of November, and then, of course, the big spring musical at the end of the school year. So see what the kids are doing at the beginning of the year and see how they progress over the course of the year to the biggest production at the end of the school year. And then we also have an arts festival that we have at our school in May every year. So it's always a very busy year for the performing arts.
And for our listeners' awareness, the students that participate in these activities, they're offered both in curricular means for grade as well as extracurricular?
That's correct. So except for the theater studies, which only kicks in high school, all the other performing arts have lessons in fourth and fifth grade and then continuing lessons into the middle school years. And then in the high school, we have a full array of theater courses. We teach music and band, chorus, and they're all curriculum as well.
So I guess the biggest question that I have as a musician myself, knowing that in the performing arts, so much is learned by the ensemble effort, whether it's in band, a choir, or a theatrical production, there's timing, there's tuning, there's ways of seeing body language, eye cues. How has that been adapted in a just in general terms for some of the teachers that you may have had conversations with regarding continuing performing?
The biggest challenge, I think, for all of us, none of us are standalone activities. They're all group activities, and it's one of the strengths of those activities is that it gets students to learn how to work as a team and work as a combined effort to create something. They learn how to look at each other and the conductor during a concert. They know how to follow the lead in a production, a theatrical production. That's been our biggest challenge as far as we can teach kids how to play pretty much, not necessarily as well as we do it always in person. And we can teach small groups because of the social distancing rules that have been put in place. So we can put certain amount of students in the room at one time. But those big ensembles, that ability to listen from stage left to stage right to make sure you can hear all the different instrumentation in between, or that or if you're doing a show, a play, that the entrances and exits are all done. That's one thing the Zoom, when I call it in quotes, the Zoom atmosphere doesn't conquer. And the problem is, for me, is people are getting very used to seeing and very impressed with seeing the technological work that are being done of putting together choirs and putting together bands and orchestras, which is great because we really need to entertain people this time with things being so dark so much of the time that it's great to have that ability, but it really is not the same thing as, like you said, as a musician yourself, hearing that sound of everything behind you and looking in front of you and seeing an audience appreciating what you're doing. So I think the biggest loss that the kids are dealing with, now we are able to, and I know that Justin has been able to do some theatrical stuff, but because of the rules that are set in place, we can't put 150-piece band up on the stage 6 feet apart, there would be no room to do that. So that's really been our biggest loss and our challenge. The best thing we can do is do very small ensemble groups and really concentrate on the instrumentation so that in a year when we aren't preparing for concerts because we're not going to have any concerts, we are able to teach more, worry more about the individual sound and individual technique that each student is using. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but it leads me to want to dig a little deeper on that end.
Sure.
Knowing that the performance goals have shifted and the technology, so I don't know if our listeners really understand the complexities of doing virtual concerts and kind of time that is in between when the children did their performance and when the actual show happens. There's quite a bit of time for all the technological editing and syncing and network. I'm just wondering, how are all of your teachers handling the technology back end? These are the unseeable barriers.
And we can't reproduce everything. So example of that, I direct the fall play. Mr. Anonia does the spring musical, and I have a teacher, Mrs. Smith, who does our children's show. But I directed the fall play, and it was really the first production during pandemic. Now, if I remember correctly, most of the schools lost their spring musical last year, right at the time when they were about to perform it. So they had that opportunity to rehearse and unfortunately did not get the opportunity to perform. So we didn't have time from March to April or May to really get into this new technology. As the technology has gotten more user-friendly for those people who are good at that, it really is a long time between, so that if you're doing a concert and you're doing the clarinets, you may only be able to do 6 clarinets playing with earpieces in their ear to hear what they're supposed to sound like, and you're recording those 6, and then you have to edit those all in together in little blocks. It boggles me how they can even do it, because I watch it, and it's like, you know, it looks very clean and very professional, but you're right, it's a long time in between. So, for example, right now, Mr. Nonia, who is also our choral director, is putting together a concert, a chorale concert. And in order to do it, instead of 20-some-odd people, instead of 30-some-odd people, instead of 70 or 80 or 100, he was able to put them in, for example, at one point they're in the gymnasium being videotaped on the bleachers, so they're socially distanced apart, and singing with masks on, because it's the year of the pandemic, and people are going to do things with masks on, and they're going to see it that way. You're going to see it on the screen that way. I know that when I directed the fall play, I did it the opposite way. Everyone stayed in their home with a camera and did their part, and then we edited it all together. So there's different variants of how to do it, and they finished recording the fall play and didn't get to see their fall play for 2.5 weeks later.
It's difficult for students to understand the impact of their work when the feedback is so removed on so many levels.
And we're used to playing not for the applause, but the applause becomes a part of, you know, you get finished with a number, whether it's an orchestral number or a dance number on stage or anything else. We're used to hearing the audience appreciation. We don't get that now. And we have to be really strong and committed to our art and our music and our craft to make sure that we are doing it for that purpose. And I know that one of your questions that we talked about was, you know, what are we going to get out of this positive? It's an appreciation for your craft as what it can do, even if you're not getting the immediate gratification we're used to.
How could listeners experience some of the performances that the students are doing if they're not part of the school district?
Well, most of the school districts, I know what Parkland does, and I'm sure Bethlehem area does as well, on their website or Facebook page, they will have, and again, you'll be talking to Justin later, he did a production of Christmas Carol, and you'll be really interested to see how he did that. But with ours, our chorale concert, for example, which is going to premiere on Monday night at 7 o'clock, we advertise it through those means. We advertise it through the website. We make moto calls to the district and say, hey, the 4th and 5th grade from these two schools are doing a concert. Come join us. Last May, when we did the Festival of the Arts, which is a 3-day festival up at the high school, we still did the Festival of the Arts. We just put everything virtual as much as we could, took pictures of all the artwork and showed them with music behind it as the visual art part of it, and had concert excerpts as part of the performing arts part of it. So, and that's really the best way they can find out. And I will say one other thing. The financial hit that we're taking, most high schools, I'll use the Freddies for example, because that's such a big group and everyone knows what the Freddies is. All of those schools, they fund their own projects, their own shows through their ticket sales and ad sales and fundraisers. It's not like a big budget number in the school district's budget. So people like us who did Tuck Everlasting last year and paid thousands of dollars to be ready to do a show, and then we got stopped right before we were supposed to go on, and we had put quite a bit of money into it. And people want their money back for tickets because they paid it and they asked for money back. So it's tough that we get hit financially, and the kids get really, they lose out on that really special experience.
How else could listeners, understanding the restrictions that we have for the students, how could listeners support the arts in general for not only the Parkland School District, but for students all throughout the Lehigh Valley and beyond? What would be your suggestions? I know, Mark, you're quite a bit of an advocate for arts education on the state level. So what would your thoughts be to share with our listeners?
I think it's important that they take an active stance, email or write in a positive way, to their school board of directors, to the State Education Association, wherever they feel their representatives, to make sure that there's constant support for the arts. You know, the arts, we're very fortunate in this area. Most of our school districts really support performing and visual arts quite well. But that's not true everywhere. And when budgets get tough, that's the first thing that gets cut. And right now, it's going to cost extra to do it with concerts and with the way we have to do it. And I think we just have to be vocal and make sure our representatives and our school board members know we really want the arts to be as alive as possible until we get through this epidemic, and then we're back to normal in another year, let's say.
Well, let's hope so. And that normal comes much quicker than that.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for talking with us this evening.
Thank you. You too.
After the break, we are going to be speaking with Justin Amon, who is the director of musical theater productions at Freedom High School in Bethlehem. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Sheila White.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
I'm Greg Caponia. WDIY listeners asked for a program that takes a deeper look into the local Lehigh Valley businesses. WDIY and the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce invite you to listen to On Every Main Street every Monday at 6:30 p.m. on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org and on the new WDIY app.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm your host, Sheila White. In our second half of the program, we are talking to Justin Amon, Director of Theater at Freedom High School in the Bethlehem Erie School District. Welcome to the program, Justin.
Thank you so much, and it's great to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I got to tell you, it's been a very interesting time, because I think the word unprecedented has just been way overused. So, interesting time for our kids and the students in our area schools. Earlier in the program, we were talking with Mark Stutz at Parkland Area School District, but I thought I would like to get more of a perspective of a director's point of view, not that Mark doesn't direct, he does direct their fall play. You have been taking on a lot of responsibilities with the theater program, yet you don't teach for the district. So, my first question for you, Justin, is how are you able to continue working with the students even though you're not a teacher in the district?
Yeah, I think our administration has done a really nice job just holding us accountable for what we're doing and just reminding us that we are a part of the Freedom family as coaches or theater directors. I think there's a lot of us in the school district, and I know there's a few of us at Freedom who don't necessarily teach in the building, but we're still welcome to be there for after-school programming. And, you know, as of right now, after-school programming has kind of, we've kind of hit the pause button on it with COVID-19 cases increasing. But for the majority of the fall season, we were allowed to be in the schools after school and just being treated like we are another employee. The expectations remained, and it really worked out well. They were really supportive. So that worked really well.
I'm glad to hear that, because I know that the external professionals that come in to supplement the resources, the educational resources for the schools, are so important to the students' learning.
Yeah, and we are employees of the school district, and so I think that played a part in it. And so we weren't necessarily a third-party contractor, so to speak. We are all employees of the Bethel Myers School District, so I think that also changes the dynamic.
And at the same time, you also have to follow the same COVID protocols for safety and tracing, et cetera.
Sure.
So my questions for you now are about the actual productions. Earlier in the show, we learned from Mark that many schools had to shut down weeks before they were going to present their spring musical, because that's when COVID started to hit pretty heavily. Did that also happen for Freedom High School?
Yes, we were just about 2.5 weeks or so from our production of Mary Poppins, and it was really, it had the potential to be crippling for our theater company. We were maybe a week or so away from all of our rentals arriving at the school, and you know once you receive them, you're on the hook for the bills. We were fortunate in a way, and I hate to use that term fortunate in this situation, but the timing worked out for us in that, you know, all of our rentals and stuff never arrived. And so we were kind of off the hook for some of those costs. But 2.5 weeks before the show, your sets are completed. Mostly everything is painted. And you know, Dr. White, you've been a part of theater companies. While there are things that happen last minute, the vast majority of the work is done by, you know, 2.5 weeks to go. And so, you know, we were in a difficult position, and we were really saved by our community. And I think it says a lot about theater in the Lehigh Valley and the greater Lehigh Valley area. But in particular, Bethlehem and our community at Freedom, you know, I would say 60 to 70% of our patrons who bought tickets decided to donate their money back to our theater program. And that proved to be crucial to having the show that we did this fall.
I understand also that the community, especially at Freedom High School, you have nurtured an incredible group of parents of alumni who no longer are at the school but still come together to support the program in either building sets or creating costumes and supporting as volunteers throughout the show. How have they been impacted by these restrictions?
I think that's one of the neat aspects of Freedom High School, and I'm sure other high schools have it. You know, our lead set builder, their last child graduated from Freedom in 2006, and they had a couple of children that go through Freedom. But not having a student in Freedom since 14 years ago, and he still comes back and builds our sets, they were asked to be held to the same standard. They were allowed in the building. We, you know, we took strict attendance. We asked them to take their temperatures before they arrived. And it wasn't business as usual. We limited the amount of people that we had. You know, we also took advantage of being so close to finishing our set in the spring that we used the vast majority of our set from Mary Poppins. And because it was old English Victorian style and we were doing a Christmas Carol this fall, we decided to change things up so it fit the current production. But largely, the themes were similar. So we were able to take advantage of that. So we didn't have a ton of building to do. So it limited the amount that we were in there and the amount of people that were in the building at once. But we just really were strict about, if you're not feeling well, not coming in, making sure we're checking our temperatures, and just keeping our distance as much as possible, trying to make sure our projects were, you know, one or two person jobs where we're able to keep our distance from each other, and just strictly having somebody that is monitoring. And that was often the role that I took, was if we had a cast and a crew and set builders there at the same time, it was just me floating between things just to really monitor the safety protocols and ensure that we're holding everybody accountable.
And I understand that your production of A Christmas Carol will be available for people to see in full production.
It is. We were able to do a full production. Dr. White, let me tell you, there is nothing in this production different than the productions that we would do before. The sets, the lighting, the sound, everything that we would get for a normal production, considering the circumstances, we got for this show. And I think that our viewers will truly be able to see live production that will just be available to them on demand. And it was live available for them as of about a week ago now, and it will be available for anybody until January the 8th, available at showtixforyou.com/events/FHSTC. You could also just look at us on Facebook, Freedom High School Theater Company, and that'll take you to all the links that you'll need. But truly, I mean, it is a full-off production. It is done really well by a production company, Cinescope Films. I went to college with the co-owners, and they were just so enthusiastic about the project and really charitable with their time and what they did for us. And it was really spectacular. And I don't want to get off on a tangent, but we ran through the show two times. The first time we did it, we had four cameras in the back, one that showed the whole stage, and then three that were, you know, left, right, and center kind of deal that they panned. And then for the second run through, we actually put three people on stage with cameras, shoulder cameras, and a thing called a gimbal, I learned, a stabilizer. And they just taped the whole show. And so two takes, and then we had some flexibility if we didn't like some looks to go back and work on some things. But largely all of the scene changes, everything that you're used to seeing in a production, it is featured differently in film. And it just looks fabulous. I'm biased, but I just think it looks phenomenal.
I also know that you are particular for details, as well your students are familiar with. So this sounds like a new opportunity for your students that would not have happened had they been in a normal production with just audience members coming to the auditorium. Do you think that there are more learning outcomes that the students are getting because of the shifting that the production has had to take?
I think so. I think we're learning a lot about holding ourselves accountable. I keep using that term with safety precautions. I think there's a lot to be said about you can't really go on autopilot when you're working under these conditions. You have to think really deeply about what you're doing. But I think learning-wise, we then not only did we prepare a live production, and our students took that very seriously. We did not stop in between takes. We really ran it through. But on top of that, now they're getting almost like a film experience. And I know in particular, I could speak to one student, our Scrooge, Michael Sheridan. He is so interested one day in going into TV or film. And while he loves theater, he now had an opportunity to have these cameras right in his face. He got to work them a bit. He really did well with it and had fun with it. And now our students are being open to a completely different experience that is ancillary to the live theater. And they're being asked to do things without having audience reactions, which I think is tough. You know, in acting and performing, so much of what you're doing is inspired and motivated by the reactions of an audience. And they're being asked to do it without it. And so it's just this intense focus and having to intrinsically be motivated and taking control of their opportunity. We talk a lot in student development about agency. Well, this is all about students taking control and having the agency to be successful. And so I think that this did afford us a lot of opportunities. I think in local theater, in professional theater, as we look forward, live theater, as we know it, is going to be different because I think we're going to start preparing shows with the expectation that there is, you know, more access. I think about Broadway and the way they did Hamilton, and that kind of inspired what we did. I think, you know, the days of needing $200 to see a live show on Broadway, for instance, is going to change and probably for the better. And that goes to your question about different opportunities. I think we're seeing how we can make things more accessible to people. And as we talked about at our theater company, yes, it was a bummer not to have 800 people in our audience. But because of the way that we're showing the production, we have the opportunity to reach so many more people. We have families in California and in Massachusetts and in Europe and France. And all those family members are now going to see the production that would have never seen it before. So I think it has unlocked and unleashed so many different opportunities. And I was really thrilled by it.
That's so good to hear, Justin. And I'm so happy that the kids still have an opportunity to perform. I'm incredibly uplifted that the students are still doing the exercises of theater and adjusting to these opportunities. Is there any other thing that you would like to share with our audiences as we wrap up our conversation?
Sure. I would just like to thank you again and thank everybody for their commitment and love of the arts and just remind them that our kids are just special. They're resilient, they're resolute, and when they set their minds to something, they do it, and they do it so successfully. I'm just so impressed and hopeful for the future of theater because of our students and the young people that are getting into it now. I think the future is so much brighter with this group of young students, and I can't wait to see what the future of theater holds because of them.
Well, Justin, you are a wonderful person to have in our school district and leading this merry band of actors onto greater things. Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. Have a good evening, listeners. I'm Sheila White.